Chapter 9. "I wish you fellows would make up your minds," Caesar said. "Are we looking for smugglers, or natives, or the egg? And can't we go find something to eat instead?"
"Pray don't be so thick," Temeraire said. "We are looking for all three, of course, and all three of them are one, and we will go get something to eat when Thake has worked out their trail and which way we ought to go."
This conclusion seemed quite self-evident to him, so he was puzzled to find Rankin utterly dismissive of the notion, and even Lawrence saying to Thake,
"Can the natives be responsible for the smuggling of the goods? I suppose the French might be supplying them at some distant port."
"It would certainly save them a great deal of labour," Thake said. "If I do not see how the natives could profit from the effort of carrying large quantities of goods across the width of an entire continent, only to the Sydney market."
"Why should they not like the goods for themselves?" Temeraire said. "The porcelain is very nice, although they have been careless again."
Anyone would have liked the piece, he thought, when it had been whole.
"While I cannot really wish anything so nice broken, if they meant to drop them anyway, it would be very useful if they should drop some others as they go, and perhaps they may. Which way have they gone?" he asked,
which, after all, was the real, the crucial point. It was a little disheartening that Thake would have it that the pieces were older, had been here since the last rainfall, which certainly had not been in the last week, and of course that was far too long. But he insisted. Temeraire sighed a little, but after all this was still a trail. If they had come this way before, then likely they had come this way again, or at least should end in the same place.
"And that would suit very well," Temeraire said to Lawrence, tearing hungrily into his meat. They had gone on and taken a few kangaroos to breakfast upon. "If we might fly on and then wait for them to come to us, now that we know they will not be carrying the egg onto a ship somewhere and over the ocean where we can never get at it again."
He looked for more shards or broken bits as they flew onward now. If the ground had not been such an inconveniently bright colour, it might have been easier. And also there were quite distinct sections flying over, some of which were much more troublesome to examine. Temeraire preferred those where the trees and shrubs were scant and fire-blackened, and the grass very low to the ground, but in the afternoon when they had flown past a dry creek bed lined with the dark green shrubs, the vegetation flourished up again. Huge straw-yellow mop-heads of grasses and pale green tender shrubs everywhere, trees spiking up. Caesar did not help either. He would have it that one could not hunt very well here, and they had very likely lost the trail, and the Aborigines had gone quite another way, and so forth. And all the while the hot, dusty wind blew and blew into Temeraire's nostrils and his eyes, and the red sand gritted upon his hide and collected in small pockets as his wings rolled through each stroke and itched, and the men in the belly netting muttered low and sullenly of home, and called out now and again to try and wheedle a halt for,
"A little grog, sir! It is downright inhuman in this heat!"
Caesar murmured and complained also, muffled by the heat and wind, until after an hour he said, suddenly,
"Aye, what is that there?"
And Temeraire halted mid-air and whipped his head around, hovering.
"I saw something there, I thought," Caesar said.
But Temeraire flew back and forth and saw not the faintest gleam of foreign colour among all the bushes and trees, not a track, or even much of a clearing which could have been a camp, and Thake shook his head when he looked an inquiry back.
"Well, it wasn't colour so much,"
Caesar said thoughtfully, on being interrogated. He was flying in lazy circles while Temeraire searched.
"Just I thought I saw something moving, but when I sang out it stopped. No, I can't tell you exactly where. This country all looks the same to me. I think it is pretty wonderful. I should have spotted it at all."
"Very wonderful," Temeraire said, "when you cannot even say what you saw, and no one else can see it."
"I am sure I don't need to bother another time," Caesar said, bristling up his shoulders and throwing out his red blazoned chest, "if my effort is so unappreciated. Just how I suspected it should be, and my fault, of course, that you can't hunt it out. If you want my opinion, if there were 100 Aborigines hiding about in this grass, you wouldn't know it at all. We ought to fly somewhere else entirely, and at least we might set down and have a rest."
"I am not so lazy that I must have a rest before midday," Temeraire said. "We have already wasted enough time on whatever it is you saw."
Rankin was standing in his harness on Caesar's back, looking behind them.
"We will have to set down," he said, "in at best an hour. There is a thunderstorm coming on."
"Why ever should he think so?" Temeraire said to Lawrence, as he banked away onto his course.
The sky was clear, except for a little bank of blue clouds one might see if one looked around behind, but those were not coming on swiftly.
I have been flying courier duty since I was 12 years old. I can damned well smell a storm, Rankin said flatly as Caesar came up with them, and 20 minutes later Temeraire was forced to concede, as the wind coming towards them began to die away in odd fits and starts, a suggestion of heaviness in the air, and as they flew on, the cloud bank behind grew long and turned a dark, essential blue, striped a little with luminous grey and seaweed-greenish bands of colour. The trees stood pale and white-limbed beneath it, lit from before by the sun.
"And it will surely erase all signs of passing," Temeraire said to Lawrence unhappily. "Whatever can be done, I suppose we might fly on anyway and try to keep ahead."
"I'm not flying on through that," Caesar said, looking behind apprehensively, as, for emphasis, the clouds put down abruptly a silent, forked line of lightning directly to the earth, spidery and branching and flaring a moment in the dark. The roll of thunder came a long, dragging moment later, and a thin, wispy grey curtain of rain trailed down at one end of the cloud.
"We had better not," Lawrence said grimly, "and we ought not set down on higher ground either. You are too large."
There was a little open space of bare red earth and yellow grass among some larger dunes and sheltered from the worst of the rising wind. The clouds were near upon them by then, and spattering gusts of rain which did not fill the eagerly outstretched canteens and cups, but only dimpled the softer loose dirt and left spots upon their clothing and rattled the dry blades of grass. It was still hot and oppressive. The dark cloud came rolling up across the sky, suddenly quick after its long creeping approach, and the sun vanished. More great long forks of lightning were tonguing down to the earth against the wide-open horizon all around, and the voices of the thunder roared and groaned to one another from one side of the clouds to the other, so that one almost imagined meaning into it. Temeraire could not stop himself trying to make sense of it. He felt on the verge, over and over, as when he had learned only a little of some different sort of language, and thought he had just picked out a familiar word or two amid the sea of new sounds. The wind shifted, coming hard into their faces. Another thin spatter of unrefreshing rain thrown into his eyes and nostrils, and flinging the dust upon him, so he had to blink and shake his head, snorting. A smell of distant smoke quite clear upon his tongue. Violet and orange haze spread across the sky, and Temeraire put out his wing a little further to shield the egg a little better from the wind.
"Peculiar sort of colour there," Caesar said uneasily, sitting up on his hindquarters. He had grown a great deal, and when he stretched now his head might clear Temeraire's shoulder. It was a strange colour, a vivid glow of red as though someone had painted a line across the horizon, and it was altering the colour of the sky, casting that umber light on the clouds, so they were at once blue and muddied with orange-red. And still the lightning flashed against it, although now difficult to see.
"May I beg you to put me up?"
Lawrence said, and Temeraire lifted him so he might see. Lawrence opened up his glass and stood looking on Temeraire's shoulder, and then said,
"Thank you. Captain Rankin, Mr. Forthing, I believe we had better get all aboard again."
The fire came upon them with shocking speed, a low hissing beneath the continuing crash of the thunder and dry wind, whispering with great malice and hunger, and Lawrence shouting over the noise,
"Leave that, damn your eyes!"
while one of the convicts came reluctantly out from behind some bushes, and through the grey wisps of drifting smoke dragging a cask of rum which he had somehow stolen away after their landing, meaning to privately enjoy. The other men jeered and called, yelling at him,
"Bring it on quick, Bob, and we'll be merry as Griggs all this fucking flight for once. You can't have it all to yourself, you old sodden bitch. No, you won't."
Maynard, halting, stopped to heave the cask up to his shoulder. The fire was in the distance yet, a broad and smoke-shrouded wall of glowing orange seen through the veil, but already the yellow tips of grass were igniting like red embers upon the crest of the dune behind him as he bent, and a wave of heat came shimmering almost palpable into Temeraire's face and stole his breath. Maynard was staggering towards them, and the cask was dripping, small sparks of blue fire going up as the droplets struck the ground to meet the catching tinder of dry grass, and then the thickets were going up ahead of his feet, smoke rising in one thin column after another, blown into spreading curtains. Temeraire could not see the fire at all any more as a separate thing. All the world beyond the dunes was flame, and the smoke climbing into thick and stinging pillars around him. The man let the cask fall and began to run, shambling and coughing, towards them. Temeraire felt very strange. His head was thick and confused, and his wings felt leaden.
He breathed in deeply and coughed also. His throat and chest were closing as though someone had wrapped chains around him and was trying to draw them taut.
"Aloft!" Lawrence was roaring. "Temeraire, go aloft!"
And Temeraire thought, "But I must wait." And he felt quite tired. And then a sharp stab of pain caught his hindquarters, startling his eyes open. When had he closed them?
"Get that egg out of the fire, you damned beast!" Rankin shouted from behind.
And the egg. The egg! Temeraire, with a great bunching effort, launched himself up. As his wings spread, a great shuddering gust of hot, hot, hot wind blew up from beneath him, catching him aback. Maynard was dangling from the belly netting, being pulled in, and the cask below was a brief torch burning blue-white out of the smoke for a moment. His hindquarters yet ached. There was a little blood dripping where Caesar had pricked him hard with his claws, which ran down Temeraire's legs as he beat upwards. His wings still did not wish to answer very well. Caesar was ahead, stretched out long and flying all out in a straight line, beating and beating. Temeraire fixed upon his grey body and flew as best he could. The smoke still climbed after them in rising tendrils, mingling into columns, mingling into sheets, thickening along the ground as all the heaped growth was consumed. His breath whistled painfully in his throat, a particular effort every time, and the thunder roared abruptly very near, out of the huge building clouds overhead. He twisted away on instinct, quite uselessly. The lightning had already struck the ground, perhaps a quarter of a mile distant, and another tree was burning like a torch on its hill of red and gold. The cold air felt better on his hide, in his throat, but the wind struck him from one side and then the next. One great buffeting gust came rushing at them from above, wet and shockingly cold after the heat, and Caesar was tumbled over, his left wing and shoulder blown hard down, and turning his other directly into the gust, so he was blown every which way. And Temeraire, with a labouring burst of speed, came under him only just in time to right him. Sharp, painful sting as Caesar's claws scrabbled on his hide. Caesar steadied a little, and then they were taken apart again by the wind, another dragging gust which pulled Temeraire suddenly 50 feet straight upwards, only barely managing to keep his wings from snapping against his back.
"Lawrence! Lawrence!"
Temeraire called, to be sure that Lawrence had not been hurt by Caesar's claws, nor any of his crew. Or he tried to call, but nothing came from his throat, so far as he could hear. The thunder was going off again, like cannon or worse, beside him and ahead, all at once. The sky above blazing with great gunpowder flashes of lightning, which showed the clouds going up and up and up, like mountains full of cavernous hollows, false promises of shelter, and the edges billowing and crawling out and in like living things brooding. He tried to look and nearly had his neck wrenched around for his pains, the only comfort that he could glance downward and see the egg against his breastbone, the oilskin wrappings shining wet with rain. But the harness did not look so tight, he thought with sudden anxiety, and then the wind struck and he was tumbling, his head bowed down nearly below his forelegs. The blazing orange of the fire suddenly became the sky, the ground yawning with blue cloud canyons, and then turned over and over, blurring. He could not spread his wings. He stretched his jaws wide and drew in all the breath he could. The wind cut a little as he fell back towards the earth, and the heat rose up instead, and he felt lighter as his chest filled out. He managed to twist himself sideways and open his wings out straight up and down, in the line of his falling, and banking just a little into the wind, caught an updraft back towards the blue-black heights of the storm, already reaching a talon towards the egg, anxiously to try and see. He brushed it very gently and carefully with the edge of a knuckle. It was there. It was safe.
"Secure that rigging there, if you please, Mr. Rowland!"
he heard Lieutenant Forthing shouting, and as the fire roared up in pursuit behind them, Temeraire might have heard Lawrence's voice, but he was not perfectly sure. But he could not look, he could not turn. The fire was below, the storm above, blind and unmeaning ferocity in every direction, so vast one could not even see the limits of it. He did not see Caesar anywhere any more. The sky was so dark, so black. Smoke and thunder clouds and no relief, and somewhere there might be sunlight, but so far as Temeraire was concerned, there was none left in the world at all, and no direction either. He put down his head and flew on.